This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the joys they've experienced in sobriety, because we all know going sober isn't easy, but it does make life a lot easier. And today I'm going to be talking to Justin, super sober life, and he really is a super sober hero. So, Justin, hello, how are you?
Good morning, and how are you? You're fabulous, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're glowing.
And you are. Isn't that the brilliant thing about sobriety?
Oh, God, don't you glow on sobriety. You've seen my... I'm fantastic every day. I'm really sorry about it.
Why do you think
I just apologise to people. I'm so sorry, but I'm fantastic every single day. I just...
Even you do know, between the two of us, we are just a bloody nightmare to be
Yes, really. I actually apologise to people now. I'm terribly sorry, but I'm brilliant all the time, you know. And I'm not going to tell you my secret. That's the other thing I tell. I'm not telling you my secret. Go on, tell us your secret. So you won't like it if I tell you it. Oh, what's your secret? Don't consume anything. Don't buy shit.
Well, I am so pleased you've come on here to talk to me, because I love your reels and your posts.
Thank you.
I think you are the male equivalent of me with the positivity and the kind of, it's just a different world. I think going sober has just, I think I've always been quite positive, but going sober seems to have stripped back a layer and I don't give a damn.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with sobriety, isn't it? It's like once you unlock the key, it's a Pandora's box of positivity. It's just like, well, what's not to love about life? So it's great that we're finally talking, because I have seen your reels as well. And I was like, yeah. Imagine us two at a party, no one would talk to us. Not talking to those kids in the corner enjoying themselves. They haven't even got a drink. You know, I never meant for the reels to go like that. It wasn't, TikTok was... just something I did, and everybody laughed at me because it was just like, well, you're 54 years old, you can't be doing TikTok. And I said, well, it's an easy way to get to people about sobriety. And I noticed how it worked, and it's the conversation, the running live conversation. And of course, I did a few videos and they were all 400 or 500 views. And then suddenly one day I said to my partner, Natalie, I did the one on sleep. It was January 2nd, I think it was. And I noticed that everyone was moaning about their sleep. And I was like, hang on, well, I know about that bit because we've all been through it. Yeah. And so then I posted this thing about sleep saying it's really shit, but it's going to get better. And then it was like in the morning, I was like, Natalie, this has got 2,000 views. I was like, wow, 2,000. By lunchtime, it had 15. And then by the afternoon, I was like, and then I hit 500,000 views.
You went viral.
I went viral at the age of 54. But the thing that I didn't anticipate on was that I suddenly got 5,000 followers who were obviously all doing Dry January. And then suddenly it was, hang on, there's this moment here. It was like, everyone's looking to me for their guidance for Dry January. You better step up, boy. You know, so it kind of happened by accident. I didn't plan it, and it just arrived, as the beautiful things do. Thank you, universe. And yeah, it just went from there. And it's just, it really is just encouragement and just saying, come on, you've got this, you can do it. Letting people know that, so, you know, there's pitfalls coming up. This might be a problem, that might be a problem. But I've managed to build this community where everybody now is supporting one another. And it's absolutely fantastic. It's blown me away, to be honest with you. I didn't plan on it, so...
I think those are the best things, though, aren't they, when you don't plan them? Because I'm sure people sit back and think, I must have had a master plan for my sobriety, because, you know, you did the podcast, I did this, I did that. And it isn't that at all. I just wanted to get sober and stay sober. Yeah. And then I fast realised the more I built my sober identity, the more I focused on my sobriety, the more likely I was to succeed at that point.
Yeah. And people pick up on it, don't they, as well? That's the thing that I realise, is when they see someone's really succeeding at sobriety, it gives us such an impetus to start the journey and see, well, what's this all about then? And when everyone else, you know, who's been part of the journey is chipping in saying, yeah, I feel fantastic. Oh, I feel fantastic. It's a fabulous thing to do, is to help other people. It really is. It's such an important part of sobriety as well, I realize, because I was a bit of a naughty boy for many years.
I can't imagine that.
I was very selfish. I was very me. It was all about me, and obviously it was the alcohol talking. So it was lovely to actually discover the new me and actually go, oh, I didn't know that about you. You really want to help other people and you really want to give back to society and you really want to save the planet and you want to do all these beautiful things. Didn't know that was inside you. Well, of course you didn't, because you'd hid it for all those years with booze, numbing yourself. So yeah, it's lovely to be where we are now today.
It's quite sad, really, isn't it? We don't know who we are. I suppose we start drinking at such a sort of the formative years when we're forming our opinions, and it just clouds everything.
I mean, looking back on it now, those 18 to 25 year old formative years of everybody drinking, everyone partying, you just got involved in it. It was so hard not to, you know?
Yeah, it was all the Ladette culture as well,
Of
which we
course
talk
it
about a
was.
lot on this podcast.
The one thing I think that came from it, which was a positive from the lad culture, was that the two sexes kind of balanced up. Does that make sense? There was no,
Yeah.
it used to be the girls were in one room and the boys were in the other, where we all came together and we all got smashed together. So I suppose
Yeah.
that was one positive that came from it. But I don't know if you've read my story, but you must remember I was a professional athlete. So I was doing the 100 meters and I was training 7 hours every single day, 6 days a week. So I had never been near booze. I had never been near drugs. That was not on my itinerary all the way up until the age of 19. The day that I decided that I wasn't going to be an athlete, within that week of going to Cambridge, I was drinking, taking drugs. I was just literally this switch had turned, because for me, I had to find something, because I lost quite a lot, which was direction, focus. Running in front of 30,000 people, being on
Gosh.
TV, that buzz, the adrenaline buzz of doing 100 meters, winning 100 meters, that was massive. And it was my complete and utter life. And then suddenly, for that not to be there anymore, was like, well, how on earth am I going to replace this? And it just so happened that within that week, a bar job came up in an incredible bar in Cambridge called the Blue Boar, which had 38 fonts, every single one of them Stella. We didn't sell anything else. We just sold Stella.
Oh
No
my goodness.
Carlsberg, no Carlsberg. There was no, that was it. That's what I'm saying. It was just Stella, this incredible bar. And I was thrust behind this, what can only be described as a stage, with all these people in front of me looking at me, going, hang on, hang on. Oh, I like this. I've got power here. This is great. Look, everyone's looking at me. And that was it. Just went on a 25-year journey of hedonism. I ran bars and nightclubs for 15 years, which was incredibly hard, as you could imagine, through the 90s. Oh, it was just chaos. And then I went and cleverly moved into restaurants for 10 years after that, because being the alcoholic, I couldn't leave the industry. And I'd had enough of bars and nightclubs. That was far too taxing for me. So the restaurant seemed like the natural progression, where I could surround myself with a more kind of, cultured drinker, shall we say,
Yeah.
So I was still clever enough to keep the alcoholics close, but they were easier to manage it, sat down eating food than running around a nightclub with 1,500 other people.
Do you think that was a subconscious thing? It shaped your choices, or was it quite conscious?
I think it was subconscious with a bit of conscious. I wasn't a fool. I'm quite a bright lad. I knew that, that I was going to have to replace what was being lost. And it just made sense for me. I being so good for so long, in the aspect of, how healthy I was and how fit I was. And it just, I kind of knew it was there. I knew that I would have to kind of enter the world of socializing and partying, but I was actually really quite cautious about it in a way, because I just knew, I wouldn't say that there was something wrong with me, but I knew I was an addict. I knew I had ADHD. I had so much energy, so much energy, obviously being an athlete. And various other things. I spoke really quickly, thought really quickly. School was, easy for me. And so, yeah, I kind of thought I'll just hold off, but it didn't work. It just didn't work. And then I jumped into it with both feet and I just loved it. Absolutely loved it at the start. And I loved it for many, many years, actually, if I'm going to be honest with you. They say the closest thing to being a rock and roll star is owning a bar or owning a nightclub. And it is. Totally and
Yeah.
utterly. I mean, it was completely out of control, driving around in beautiful cars and sheepskin coats and big cigars, and
You were Del Boy, weren't you?
I was Del Boy, but I was like Peter Stringfellow as well. It was terrible. My name is Justin Timothy Bone. So on all my credit cards and checkbooks, it said Justin T-Bone. So everybody knew me as T-Bone. And there was just kind of, this kind of legend in my own front room, but I wasn't. I was a legend in the town that I was in. And that was the thing. Everybody knew me. And I loved it. I absolutely lapped it up. It was great. But I was unaware of the damage it was doing to me at the time, and little by little, it was chipping away at who I was and who I was
Yeah.
meant to be. That was the thing. That I created this persona, T-Bone, and jumped into this persona and hid everything. It was a great way of hiding stuff. It was just like there was this public face, and that was happy. I was happy with that. But when the doors shut and the customers left and everybody went home, there was just me in the bar on my own with my thoughts. But fortunately, by that time of the evening, I was pretty far gone. So the thoughts weren't that clear. And it was only when I sobered up, it was like, wow, God, you really are quite a different character to who you were. I'm like really different. Once I realized towards the end, like you always do, that this was getting out of control, that I'd lost various things, whether it be wife, house, jobs, cars, friends, the list goes on. And I was just like, this can't go on. This literally can't go on. And then I became, kind of recluse. And the last 3, 4 months of my drinking, they were the hard months. Up until that, it was okay. I was going out, I was going to the pub, still socializing, walking into a pub, T-Bone, I'll get you a drink. It's like that kind of thing. And then I realized the last 3, 4 months when it was really getting out of control. And then I was going to the garage across the street, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'd wait for the garage to open, walk into the garage. They would hand me the bottle of scotch, a quarter bottle of scotch. I would go back home, which is about 50 yards away. I would down the bottle of scotch, and then I would go back to the garage. The reason I did that is because I was shaking so violently, I couldn't put my PIN number into the machine. So I literally couldn't hold my hand still. But I was buying so much booze from the garage and they knew me, so that it was okay. And that was when it was really getting out of control. And I would then just sit at home and just literally drink all day. So that process was about 3, 4 months of that real hard, lonely, drinking. And then I walked in the garage one morning and they said, we can't serve you, Justin. You've been barred. And I said, oh, what have I been barred for? And they said, you shoplifted from us last night. And this was the funny thing, after all these years of drinking, I had this line that I wouldn't cross. And I never stole booze, just didn't steal booze. If I didn't have the money, I just wouldn't steal it. To me, that was like, no, that means you've got a real problem here. And so when she said that to me, and she said, I can show you on CCTV, and I literally walked into the garage, picked up 2 bottles of wine, and walked straight back out again. I was so drunk. I didn't even, the
No.
cashier had gone, I hadn't even thought about that. And then I went back to the house, and that's when I did the 2 day detox on my own, which was without doubt the stupidest thing I have ever done in my life, ever. I
How
didn't.
dangerous, goodness.
I know at one point that I faced death. I know at one point there was a moment. I didn't move for 48 hours. I didn't go anywhere, and you can imagine just lying in a bed for 48 hours. With certain things you have to do. And I knew that there was a point where I came so close, so close. And it took me probably 4 to 5 days to start to walk again because my legs were shaking so violently. It was the whole process. And then I knew by day seven that that was it, that I'd done it. And that was always the thing, wasn't it? It's always the thing. Can I make the first week? Can I actually do this? And by the time I got to the 7th day, I was feeling stronger and stronger. And that's when I started to think, do you know what? I think I could do this. I think I can really, really do this. I knew I was being kicked out of my house. I hadn't paid the rent. So I rented a garage. I found a garage that was for rent in Bury St Edmunds. And it was a row of garages, and it was all owned by contractors. So there's no electricity, no water. It's just where they kept their paint and kind of plasterboard and things like that. So I thought, I know, I'll rent a garage. And I didn't tell anybody. And that's when I started the journey. And I moved into the garage. The first night I cried like a baby because I wasn't well prepared. And then the 2nd day I woke up and It was very odd. It was very strange because I had no objects. Everything I'd lost everything. It was just me in a garage, and no one knew I was there. I didn't have any bills. I didn't have anything that kind of modern day society said you should have around you. And I was free. I was so free. And I suddenly realized, oh my God, you put down the boulder of alcohol. And it was just a revelation, an absolute revelation. But one of the things of living in the garage was I had to be out of it by 6 o'clock in the morning, because that's when the contractors turned up to collect their stuff and, get their things for the day. So of course, the only place in Bury St Edmunds that was open at 6 o'clock in the morning was a gym. And me being an ex-athlete, I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. I'll rejoin the gym. It's got a shower, it's got a sauna, get myself sorted for the day. I can, rent a locker, keep some stuff in it if I need to. And then that's how the process all started, really. And it was just literally one day at a time. I was learning, I was reading, going to the library. I did my 135 meetings at AA in 100 days. Still, nobody knew I was living there. I didn't tell any of my friends I was doing the detox. And I was there for 4 months. And that's when I really, learned about the addiction, the problems, started reading the books, started doing the fitness. And yeah, that's how it happened. It was
That is an
amazing.
amazing story. I mean, just what a low to have hit as well.
Yeah.
So how
And
many days sober are you now, or how many years sober are you now?
I'm over 9 years. So I did, 3,342, I think, something like that now. Which is
That's a
just incredible.
serious
It's
day count.
just incredible. Just incredible. But I'm very much one day at a time. I
Yeah.
have been from day one, and I start the day exactly the same now as I started it back in that garage days. Hitting the gym, sorting my mind out, getting fit, planning for the day, thanking the universe, doing my meditation. It doesn't change. It's just consistency. And from that consistency comes the confidence, comes the belief, comes the strength, comes all of these amazing things from just doing the same thing every single day, which may sound dull to people, but it's not. It's fantastic and I love it.
I love it. I love it. It's the routine, isn't it? It's brilliant. The micro habits, the atomic habits, as James Clear would say. It's those little steps that build this amazing future, this 9 years of sobriety. Congratulations.
As I help people now, which I have done, and I do go back to it, there is so much that we need to learn from one day at a time. Because we look, it's the old scenario. If you live in the past, you will get depressed. If you live in the future, you're going to get anxious. So you live in the present, and it's a gift. That's why it's called the present, And one day at a time is so essential to me. And I love living my life like that. Of course, I plan. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a businessman. I do lots of planning. But for me, the one day at a time, I still start my day with that mantra of today. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm ready for it. I'm still aware of the fact that I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've got to keep my wits about me. And then I just get on with the day. But that same process doesn't change. Doesn't change at all. I have my journal. I write in it every morning, get my thoughts out,
Oh, you're
and
talking my language. I love it.
got to do it. Got to do
Meditation,
it.
journaling.
What's
Oh.
not to love? What's not to love? I mean, when I discovered the meditation, that, I mean, I always say with sobriety, it's about levels. What level are you at? And these levels take years for some. It's something that I found quite interesting in AA was the 12-step recovery program, was that some people could do it in days, stroke weeks, which I found really odd, because I'm still working on that and I'm 9 years in. For me, my working will be throughout the whole of my life. It's
Yeah.
not something I tick off. It's never ticked off. I'm always working and always trying to develop myself as a human and trying to be a better person. That to me is very important. And that again is the one day at a time. Those incremental steps of being a better person than you were yesterday, trying to improve yourself gradually, over a period of time, makes so much difference. And meditation was one of those, what I call levels, where I went, oh, right, I've got to this level now. And that was the spirituality, which I mentioned. And that was, again, that came years later. It wasn't immediate for me. It was something that I kind of grew into, started to read about, developed, and then I took it on board. But I was only ready to take that on board when I was ready, because I wasn't there at the start. It wasn't me. I was still working out who Justin Bone was, because I didn't know. That was the thing. I thought that Justin Bone was Justin T-Bone. And for that to change at the age I was and go, hang on, no, that's not who you are. It was, it's quite amazing thing to do. But yeah, the levels of sobriety.
I like that sort of analogy of having different levels and different paces as well, isn't it?
The quickest way to do something is slowly.
Oh, I like that.
The quickest way to do something is slowly. You can't do something quickly. It has to be slow. So
How does
don't
that
panic.
work then? You mentioned ADHD, right? And I know that I'm neurodivergent as well. So I'm intrigued because I want to do everything yesterday. How do you sort of get your head around that as somebody who's neurodivergent and the one day at a time and slowing down?
You structure your day. You structure your day. That's very important. That's something that I didn't do because, running bars, running nightclubs, running restaurants, whatever, that you're juggling so many balls at the same time. I mean, just so many balls, you wouldn't believe it. And so I had this scatterbrain, and it was so scattering. Then the sobriety came, and then so, but I still had a scattery brain. It didn't make any difference. It was like, so how do I control this? How do I make this brain focused? How do I get laser focused? And it literally was structuring my day to the point where the start of my sobriety, I was going hour by hour. So I was listening. I would get up in the morning. What am I going to do today? Where am I going to be today? And as that developed, obviously I didn't do it hour by hour, but now I can sit down and I can plan a week, if I can even plan a month in front of me. But I'm still doing one day at a time, if that makes sense. I'm still looking at the micro while trying to do the macro.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, that makes perfect sense.
But the slowly thing is essential for sobriety because you want it to take time. Because there's some beautiful things you're going to discover. And you don't want to do that in a rush. You want to discover them. You want to enjoy them. You want to live in the present and have that moment and then move on to the next thing. You don't want to go tick, 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 tick. I'm done now. I'm sober now. I've done it all. No, it doesn't work like that. You're on it for the whole of your life. It's a lovely, beautiful journey. Go with it. Take your time.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it's like what I've noticed in the second year, the sort of it shifted again. And I know that people talk about that in the first year. You just focused on getting through the first everything, aren't you? The first Christmas, the first birthday, the first. And now I feel like I'm relaxed. I always say I'm confident, but not complacent. I love that. Slowly is the fastest way to do something. That is a really, really good quote because we're always in such a rush. We're such a consumer led society, aren't we? We want the next thing, we want the next goal, we want to achieve this and achieve that.
Well, that's what's been told, what we've been taught, isn't it? It's all about, and that's why I was saying to you about the consumerism, the buy, 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 24/7. Everything is it, boom, 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 boom. But it doesn't have to be. Although everyone else around us is doing boom, 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 we can step back from that and we can say, actually, that's not for me. That's not the way I want to live. I
Yeah.
don't want to be working really hard to buy stuff and then working really hard because I can't use the stuff I've just bought because I'm working too hard. It doesn't make any sense. And the sobriety, those early months, just made me step back. It just made me step back and go, oh, we are doing this really wrong. This is not life. This is not what makes us happy. This is not what we how we derive our happiness. You keep telling us that it comes from the simple things in life, but we're overcomplicating everything. So I just kind of stripped it back, really. And the living in the garage was when I really truly realized, having, I had lots of objects in my life, as you can imagine. I had the most incredible wardrobe. You should have seen it. It was phenomenal. And each suit was a different personality because I used to gate crash things in London, you see. And when I was drinking, I'd have Carlos Fandango or Victor Ferrari, Luca Suave or Disco Volante, and they were all married to suits. And I would go out and I would get drunk and run around London and I'd crash things. I used to crash weddings and fashion shows and wedding at nightclubs and all kinds of things. It was terrible. VIP things and stuff like that. And when I didn't have all of these objects around me, and it was just literally me in this garage, it was so empowering. It was so embracing. just to know that a book or some music or the radio was enough for me. And that taught me such a good lesson in life that we don't need much. We really don't. We think we do. We think we need lots of things to make us happy, but actually they're very simple, the things that we need, whether it be a walk or some beautiful food or the sun. The sun. Do you remember the sun?
Yeah, I think I can see it just glimpsing behind a cloud.
How happy do we become when the sun comes out?
I know, we are British. We don't see it that often.
But do you know what I mean? I walked through town last week and it was sunny, and the whole demeanor changes. We say it every single season, you know, but everything changes. And it literally is just this big thing in the sky that's shining bright and makes us all happy. We don't
Yeah.
pay for it, it's free, you know, and it's one of those moments. So then I realized after about 3, 4 years, met my partner, who was incredible, Natalie. And when she met me, we met in the gym, 6 o'clock in the morning. She appeared as if by magic. And obviously, I was living in the recovery house, which you can imagine when someone says, "Oh, what do you do for a living?" But she put an incredible amount of faith in me, which I'm eternally grateful for. And we set up this fitness company called the Pop-Up Gym, and we did this yoga events. And we put the first ever yoga event in a cathedral. And that was an amazing event. And BBC came and filmed it. And I started getting into the fitness, and then suddenly it's like, hang on, I need to look at my diet. That was the thing. I need to look at my diet because I wasn't happy with the way I was feeling. I was feeling good, but I thought, hang on, I think I can feel better. This is the thing. This is the addict coming in. I want to chase the high. I'm starting to feel high on life now. So I looked at the diet and we went plant-based. And within literally 2 weeks, I'm like, oh no, I'm feeling really good. Like really good now. I'm lighter. I can feel the benefits of not eating meat and dairy. And that was like the next stage for me. So I start to do this plant-based diet. But from this comes something weird that happens to you when you do this, is you view the universe in a completely different way. When you look at an animal, you look at it in a different way because you're not eating its meat. So that small increment of just changing my diet opened up this whole new world of where am I on the planet? What am I doing here? How do I fit in? How are you meant to live on this planet? How does it work? You know, how do we all kind of interlink? And so then that was the diet, which led to me becoming spiritual and suddenly thinking, hang on, okay, well, we're all in this together. What's going on with the universe? How do we get here? And then you start reading about it and you find out that 12 billion years ago, we were all space dust. And that's the Simon Cox guy. Is it Simon Cox? What's the name of the
Brian Cox, isn't it?
Ryan Cox? That's how he
Yeah.
described it. He was on the Joe Rogan show. Joe kept pushing him. He goes, no, I want it simpler than that, simpler than that. Explain life, simpler than that. And he goes, well, basically, 12 billion years ago, we were all space dust. We were all little pieces of dust floating around in the sky. So if you take it from where to here, if you tell me there's no miracle involved in that, I'm sorry. I'm not religious. Does that make sense? I don't have a God. But to me, the universe is really important to me now because it's my way of letting go. And it's the old scenario with the sobriety, isn't it? You can control a lot of things in your life. There is so much you have absolutely no control over, absolutely zero. So as soon as you can let go and go, do you know what? I'm going to let the universe sort that out. I'm going to let the universe decide that one. I don't know where I'm going to be in a year, 5 years, 10 years. I'll let the universe decide that for me. I'll do my thing. I'll be the best person I can be. And I'll work with the universe and I'll work with the planet. And I'll try and, you know, do my bit. And I'll just see what happens. And ever since I've kind of thrown myself over to the universe and let you decide, it's been brilliant.
That is
Really, really
amazing.
good. And that's again the next level of sobriety. So you're building on these levels.
You're like
The
Sonic the
more so
Hedgehog.
it's like Sonic the Hedgehog, literally. And so now every single morning as I walk to the gym at whatever time, ludicrous time, I will look up and I thank the universe for it for the day. I do my gratitude, as people call it. It makes such a difference to my sobriety. It really, really does. And when I heard this guy being interviewed, he was some priest or something like that. He was being interviewed on this radio show. And the guy said to him, he said, why do you have faith? This, I think there was two of them. This guy was, you know, the good and the bad. And he was like, well, why do you have faith? The guy just turned around and went, well, why wouldn't you? And I thought that was so brilliantly put. Why wouldn't you have faith? It doesn't, if you're wrong, you're wrong. But by the time you find out you're wrong, you're dead. So it doesn't make any difference. So you might as well have faith throughout your life that there is something else.
It's a happier existence, isn't it? I think.
So much happier. So much happier. And it makes sobriety so much easier as well, because you don't have to worry so much. You know, you can actually go, do you know what? I'm not going to worry about that. I'll let the universe deal with that. Because we do worry about a lot of things. We have all these balls in the air. But if you can hand some of those balls over to the universe and go, look, I can't worry about that. I can't control it. You know, let them deal with that. And it, yeah, it's just was the final stage for me of unlocking the true meaning of sobriety.
So I asked my guests on, and I know you've mentioned each of these things in passing, but I want to focus on each of them.
Yeah, of course.
Your benefits of sobriety, one by one. What's your top three? What's the first one?
My first benefit of sobriety. Yeah, it has for me, it has to be my health, because I didn't have any when I was drinking towards the end. You know, it was pretty shocking. I weigh in now about 11 stone. And I think when I stopped drinking, I was about just under 17. So there was a good 6 stone on me, sort of big, like, you know, big jowls. You know, the
Wow.
sh yeah, yeah, no, the shakes and everything. I was not Justin. It was not Justin. He was a, it's like a different person had taken me over. You know, short of breath, wheezing, and all of these just really, really unfit and really, really unhealthy, which was so unlike me, bearing in mind my previous career as an athlete.
That's what I
You
was going to
know,
say. It's such a contrast, isn't it?
such a contrast. So for me, because health was so, should we just say, prevalent in my life before I started drinking, to get that back, to get my health back, to get down to a reasonable weight, to be able to go to a gym, to be able to get on a treadmill and walk for however long, to be able to do the things I used to do when I was younger, it's just incredible. It was just an amazing thing for me. So the health benefits, and they are always, you know, normally the first things you see, isn't it? Weight loss, clearer skin, clearer thought, clarity, and so forth. So the health was the thing that really got me going. And because I was going to the gym every single morning, I could see the results. I could see the results immediately. Other people could see the results. And, you know, it's what I knew. It's what I knew. It's what I was comfortable with. It was an environment that I knew that I was successful in when I was sober, which is an important thing as well. Find an environment that you were successful in when you were sober. And if you can return to that, like I did with the gym, then that shows the true turnaround, the true turnaround. And of course, you know, within 4 months, I'd lost 6 stone.
Wow.
Yeah. To the point where I went home. I hadn't seen my parents for a few months. So I don't even want to think what I put my parents through. And I opened the door and my mother burst into tears. She literally burst into tears and just started crying. I went, whoa, what's the matter? And she went, oh my God, you stopped drinking. And she knew straight away. She knew straight away just by looking at me, the weight loss, the skin, and all of that. And she was so happy. And that, as I say, that came from the health aspect. Yes, the results are instant, but that's what I needed, if that makes sense. I needed instant results to keep me
Yeah.
going. Yeah.
And that sort of
So,
ties into your personality, doesn't it? And some things, I think for some people, it takes time and further. Because I can't, people say to me, when did you lose the weight? Because I lost 3 stone.
that's a lot for you. You're not a lot.
I
You're
didn't even
not.
realize I had 3 stone to lose, to be honest. I would have probably said, oh, stone will do. And my body's just found its kind of
Yeah.
level. When I sort of think about it, I can't tell you how quickly it happened. I wasn't watching for that necessarily, although I really was with one eye. I was
Yeah.
like, no, I just want to stay sober. I just want to stay sober. Don't get disheartened if the scales are going up because you might
Yeah.
want a bit of chocolate in the evening. Doesn't matter. But because I was treating my body better, there was something in removing alcohol that just shifted everything.
I mean, all I knew is the gym sessions kept getting longer and longer. That's how I knew I was getting fitter. That was it. Is the longer I could stay in the gym, the better it was for me. And so my first gym session, I think, was about 10 minutes. Yeah, it was ridiculous, but it was that process. And I say to people, you know, going to a gym isn't necessarily always about working out. It's about being in the environment, which is why I go there first thing in the morning, at a ridiculous time, along with other ridiculous people who go there at ridiculous times. But actually, and I shouldn't say this, but you look around the gym and they're nearly all winners. Do you know what I mean by winners?
Yeah, I
They're
know.
people who are getting on in life. They're people who are doing shit. And just to be in that environment, just being around those people, I found so beneficial in the early stages of sobriety. So as I say, you know, I maybe spend 10 minutes doing stuff in the gym, but being around everyone else, watching everyone else get ready for work and thinking, God, look at these people. They're really determined people. They've got a grip. They've got a handle on life. That's what I still get from it being in the gym. It's being around this positivity. And then, right, where are the positive people? Where do they hang out? And then suddenly your mindset is shifting because you're moving from your negative people, which obviously we all had negative people around us when we were drinking. And
Yeah.
that was the other thing. You need to get rid of those very quickly. And that was going to be hard for me because I knew thousands of people within the town that I lived in. So how do I do that shift? How do I shift from moving from that to moving to that? The fitness was the thing for me, I think. That gym environment.
It's just such a good tip. We are the sum of the people we hang out with. And as drinkers, we would hang out with people that drank like us or worse, so that we can compare ourselves and feel better. So, yeah, it is a bit of a shift, but I love the idea of hanging out at the gym.
Oh, it's brilliant because the people I was meeting and talking to, these were real go-getters. We're talking about some high-performing people here, and just telling them my story and what I was doing. And I'd say, oh, I'm now 4 weeks sober. But they started to know how many weeks I was sober, and they started to become part of the journeys, part of the process. And they were congratulating me, and they'd be saying, "Oh, you look fantastic! You're looking good! You're doing well!" And suddenly, I've shifted that. These people I had, these negative friends, I don't need you anymore. I've got these new friends. These are positive people. They're doing good things. I hang around with these lot, don't I? And so, yeah, no, just hanging around a gym in the morning is if you can do it at the early stages, it really is beneficial. Really beneficial.
Well, that is amazing. And the health benefits, aside from obviously the obvious ones of weight loss and sleep.
I sleep like a baby. Let's not go there. I mean, it's the big thing, isn't it? That's what went viral, that everybody who came off the booze suddenly went, oh my God, I'm sleeping terribly. What's going on here? I'm having these vivid nightmares. And of course, no one had told me about the sleep. No one tells you about the fact that, yeah, it's going to be really difficult at first to get to sleep because you've been using booze, but you haven't been sleeping. It's not sleep. You've passed out. So then suddenly you get this proper deep sleep. And funnily enough, I got a WhatsApp this morning from someone who's 10 days sober. And they went, oh my God, I just had the best night's sleep. And you think, you remember what that's like, don't you?
I know.
That first night where you wake up and go, oh wow, I've just done 8 hours. I've just done the most beautiful 8 hours of sleep you can ever imagine. And you just want to tell the world. You just want to tell the world, don't you? I slept so well last night.
And
People
it's
look at you.
amazing how many people don't actually realize how much alcohol impacts their sleep until you start talking to them and you say, "Would you normally wake up about 3 or 4 a.m.?" Yeah, how did you know?
I love sleep. Don't you just love sleep?
I managed 10 hours the other night. I don't wish to boast.
Just
Someone
getting into
told you you're
bed.
running a marathon. I managed 10 hours sleep. I'm really
Awesome.
chuffed with
Awesome.
that.
It's just brilliant, isn't it? How can you get so excited over sleep? There you go. Simplicity in life, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. So, what is your second positive?
The second positive is the diet that came from it. So I know that these two are a kind of intrinsically linked as such, but there's two things, I say, stopping drinking, you'll never ever regret it. And you're the only thing you'll wish is that you did it sooner. Exactly the
Yeah.
same with being vegan. As soon as you do it, you suddenly realize, hang on, whoa, 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 this is a game changer for me. I launched a company with Natalie called Vito Mito. So this was a plant-based company. We did takeovers in pubs and residencies, and we had this fantastic menu that was chicken burgers, burgers, curries, street bowls. And the entire menu was vegan. We didn't tell anybody. We didn't tell a soul.
Ooh.
So although it was called Vito Mito, if you were clever, you could work out and go, oh yeah, Vito Mito, no meat. Yeah, that makes sense. But on the entire menu, we didn't say anything. It's just somewhere in the corner, I think it said 100% plants. So we kind of tricked people into eating plant-based food. That was the idea, that we were going to, kind of just say, look, try this burger, see what you think. Oh, by the way, it's made out of peas. And so we tricked all these people, and it was a great success. But by becoming plant-based, that's when I really realized that I was starting to connect with nature, the planet, the universe. It just, I don't know if you are plant-based or not.
This is a really, really good topic at the moment because, yeah, we are talking about it. My daughter last week decided she wanted to be vegetarian. Since last week, we've not eaten any meat. So I am so curious about this. And somebody joked with me because I said, look, I've actually started running this week as well. And this, I've become somebody that I don't know who this person is, but she's a heck of a lot fitter and a lot sort of more responsible than the previous version of Louisa. So we don't mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I am so curious about being plant-based.
As I say, it's the way you look at the world. It's the way you look at a bird or an ant or a bee, something small like that. You just in the past you wouldn't have thought about it, but then you can go, "Hey, Mr. Bee, how you doing? How are your friends?" You're like that. I'd never have done that if I wasn't eating plant-based. Just didn't give a crap. I didn't care about animals. Animals are something I eat. They're just, they give me fuel. But when you change that mindset and you go, oh no, we're on the planet for a reason. We're all here for a reason. It's all interlinked. And for me, the diet was the thing that made me go, right, we're all interlinked. We're all together on this planet. But going back to what I was saying with Vito Mito is we weren't lecturing. And I'm not lecturing about it. It's not my thing to go, oh, you can do this, you can do that. What we were trying to do was kind of, there's this different world out there. Have a look at it. Try it, see what you think. And if you like it, you might gradually come into it. And then one day you'll go, actually, this is for me. But what we were trying to do was just say, look, you don't have to eat meat and dairy every day. That's
Yeah.
not what it's about. You can have loads of fantastic food. So yeah, the diet for me was the bit where I suddenly realized where I fitted on this beautiful planet of ours and this universe that we live in.
So, would the drinking version of you have been concerned like this about going plant-based? Was this ever on your mind?
No, never.
So,
Not
it
at
is
all.
purely down to sobriety and getting that clarity and.
Absolutely. It's all about the feeling good, feeling better. Mentally, feeling good, feeling better. How can I feel better? How do I improve myself? As I say, those increments. How do I make myself a better human being? How do I get to the Dalai Lama level?
Yeah, you're aiming high.
You know what I mean? How do you get to the level where you can sit in a room for 3 hours and meditate? How do you get to that? And what would you just do these steps? And the diet was the one that really changed how I viewed the world. And I didn't expect it. That was the thing. And Natalie was the same. We didn't expect it. We did it for health reasons. We did it because we knew it was better for us. And so, yeah, it was a pleasant and beautiful surprise. It was absolutely beautiful to suddenly go, oh yeah, we look at the world in a completely different way. And if you do try it, you will do that. You will. You
Yeah.
will. You'll find that little thing where you go, hey, Mr. Bumblebee. And at that moment you'll go,
I'll go, oh, Justin.
I'm part of the universe. I'm really out of a part of it now. Not taking from it, I'm giving back to it. And that's what we do with our sobriety. What we try and do, the more sober we get, we want other people to become sober. We want to help them. We want to encourage them. We want to show them the light. We want to give back. And that's what I'm trying to do with the diet. I want to give back to this beautiful planet of ours.
It's an amazing thing to be able to give back as well. Is there a part of in your life that you just get to a point of wanting to have meaning to life? And it's like, I want to have mattered. I want my impact on this planet and on the people around me to be a good one.
It's all about purpose. I don't know if you've ever read the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. But
Yes, years ago.
he explains that people are the happiest in life when they've just had a child. It's not because they've had the child, it's because they suddenly realize that they have the purpose. Oh, why am I here? Why am I here? And suddenly this little face appears and they go, ah, this is my purpose. This is what I'm here to do. I'm here to make sure that this environment for this particular individual is the best that I can provide. And so it is that purpose thing. It's like, and again, from the sobriety, when you sober up, you suddenly realize why, it's that question, why am I here? What's my role in all of this? What am I meant to be doing?
Yeah.
And I realized, obviously, from running the bars and the nightclubs and being the rock and roll star, that I had a gift. I had a great gift. People, I could stand on the stage and people would listen to me. I'm a good communicator. Oh, hang on, maybe I can do something with this. So that's when, for me, the sobriety really taught me purpose, because I suddenly thought, even though I was sat in that garage 9 years ago, later on, I'm going to help as many people as I can quit booze. And I'm in a particularly good position to do that because I've seen there, been there, done it. And I can speak from experience, and hopefully I can show them through a massive transformation, which I have done, that, look what you can achieve. Look what you can achieve sober. And from doing the, the cathedral, I was invited to number 10 Downing Street because it was such a successful company. And so within 3 years, I'm like living on the street. And I'm at Downing Street. I'm in number 10 Downing Street, and I'm stood there sober. And I give this thing about this company and what I've achieved. And the room stands up, and I get this standing ovation, which not came out of nowhere. And it's just like, what on earth is happening here? But it was one of those moments, right? This is what you're meant to be doing. What you thought you were meant to be doing, completely wrong. This is what you're meant to be doing. And I look at it now as a balancing act. I did 25 years of being naughty and doing all the wrong stuff. So in order to balance that out, I've got to do 25 years of really good stuff, which
Yeah,
I'll
and then the
do.
scales will balance.
And then the scales will balance. And then I will be happy and look back on my life and go, yeah, that was good. That was good. So that's where Super Sober Life came into it. Although it took me quite a few years to get to that stage, as I explained to you, I took a lot of time making sure I was right in the right place. And I'm going to be honest with you now. My goal is actually, and please laugh at this, my partner does, everyone else does, I want to be the Tony Robbins of the sober world. Do you know what I mean?
I
I
love
want to be on that
it. I did
stage.
laugh. I did laugh a little bit, but I
You
just
want to be
only because I
laughing.
love it.
I
I
want to be
love
on that
it.
stage with 1,000 guys in front of me, aged 50 to 70. I want them in the palm of my hands, telling them, guys, you've been sold a pup. It's a lie. It's a con. Listen, this is how you should be living your life. This is what you should be doing. Look how high I am. Because I don't know anyone higher than me, not on a 24/7 basis. I'm high as a kite most of the time. I love life. Really
Yeah.
winds people up. But that's what I want to be doing. I want to be on that stage converting these people and saying to men of my age, guys, look what you can achieve if you stop drinking.
It doesn't matter how old
No,
you are. I
no,
mean, I
no,
thought by the time I
no.
hit 40, I would be set in concrete. That
Yeah.
would be the way I was going to be. And my biggest life changes have come since 44.
Yeah. Absolutely. Totally and utterly agree. And it now is the time, I think, to do the changes. It really is. When you start to get, I'm speaking from a male perspective here, when you get into your late 40s, your 50s, your 60s, things start creaking, and you're not as good a place as you were. And you are either going to go, right, this is my life and I'm going with it, or you literally have to pivot and say, no, there is a new life out there. There's a new me available. And I think that's what I want to try and get over to men of my age, is say to guys, look, you can stop the drinking. I'm 54 years old. And 4 months ago, I had this metabolic test thing done in the gym with his personal trainer. And when the ticket came out, even he looked at the ticket and looked at me and he went, how old are you? I said, 54. And he goes, says 43. And I went,
Wow.
and he went, what on earth are you doing? So I told him about, I said, I'm plant-based. I don't drink, I don't touch sugar. I do occasionally, but very rarely. I drink 3 liters of water every single day. I probably eat 20 veg. I did dinner and I had literally taken 10 years off my life.
That is amazing. The metabolic age thing is something I've only recently done. When I was a drinker, I was 44, but I had a metabolic age of 47. And so then I quit. And then I've noticed recently I'm just about to turn 46 and I've got a metabolic age of 43.
Brilliant. It's
So
incredible, isn't it?
And the only change I've made is alcohol
Alcohol. Yeah, I know. It's
and more
phenomenal.
sugar.
The more sugar. That sugar's the devil's work.
I know.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on sugar. That's too many levels in advance.
You know that the World Health Organization, they count sugar as their number one most dangerous drug in the world.
Shame they don't talk about alcohol then, isn't
No,
it?
alcohol's number three.
Isn't it
Obviously, lots of
bonkers,
people.
both alcohol and sugar? You won't have many discussions about it. You don't hear about it being a dangerous drug.
Not at all. No, they don't want to talk about it. But I think the point is what I was trying to make was that, you know, as you've proved as well, when you stop drinking, you add years onto your life. Now,
Yeah.
time is the most valuable thing there is. It's the most valuable commodity. I was once told by someone that if you want to be the richest man in the world, find 1 second in the day and sell that second. You know, and we've got this ability just by stopping drinking to increase our longevity, especially at the age of 50. You're adding another 5 to 7 years on your life. You know, and
Yeah.
that's an incredible. When you put it, it's just madness. Why would you carry on drinking if you knew as soon as you stopped putting down that bottle, you've got another 5 to 7 years on your life? But these aren't just 5 to 7, these are healthy 5 to 7 years. You got to remember, you
That's
know,
the
these are
other
ones
thing,
where,
isn't it?
yeah, that you got to be moving around. This is where the yoga comes in and the diet, because the yoga is all about the mobility. And it's not about, you know, when I get to the age of 80, I want to be able to walk around. I want to be able to, I wouldn't say run, if I could, that'd be great. But, you know, I want to be fit and healthy in my later years. I don't just want to get old and not move around and not be able to do stuff. And I think that's an important part as well, is to know that once you stop drinking, once you start the health, once you start the diet, you are adding literally years onto your life expectancy.
Yeah,
It's mind blowing
which,
when you think about it.
because I would say, even though my metabolic age has sort of gone down, the years I've added, I can't imagine, because I don't know if I'd have carried on drinking as a grey area drinker. But if I'd have just habitually carried on drinking the way that I was, not giving a damn, I mean, my skin was breaking out, I had rosacea, you know, I had all sorts of different ways that my body was complaining at me. I don't know how many years I've shaved off my life, actually. I think it's quite a lot. I really do. I think my body was incredibly under pressure.
Yeah, I like that phrase, under pressure. Yeah, and again, you know, it's that confidence, isn't it? Because when you're drinking and you have an ailment, as we all do when we were drinking heavily, there was a little
There was
hangnail,
always an ailment,
there
yeah.
was always something, wasn't there? And then suddenly when these ailments goes, this kind of confidence comes, doesn't it? I mean, we all know that we're heading in the direction of death. It's there, we can't avoid it. But there's this confidence of feeling alive, feeling fit, feeling ready, feeling good. You know, just feeling good. I feel great. Yeah, you know. And that's where I called it super sober, because I suddenly realized after a few years, I actually started to feel like a superhero.
Yeah.
Which is an odd feeling when you're a superhero and no one else knows it.
As long as you've got the outfit, that's the main thing.
I realized at a party, I was in a party in London, and one of my things that I used to do when I was drunk is if I was in a room and it was like a bit dull, it was like someone, Justin, will you get the party going? Yeah, of course. And within 5 minutes, I'd have the dance floor full. I was brilliant at it. And I would walk around the room and I'd start dancing and I'd get a bump, like, come on, yeah, to there. And it was what I did. It's what I did, you know, it's what I was paid to do, and I was brilliant at it. And I was at this particular place in London. There was a good 200 people. And I thought, there was no one on the dance floor. And I thought, I wonder if he's still got it. I wonder if he can still get the party going. Has he still got it in him? And I did within 10 minutes. And I had the place absolutely bouncing. And I stood in the middle of this room, and everyone else was drunk, by the way. And here we're dancing on the bar. And I was just having the, and there was me, sober as a judge, in the middle, just looking around, thinking, I created this. I feel like a superhero. I'm super sober. And that's where super sober life came from.
Exactly. Which brings us to the last point of your positives of sobriety, your third thing.
Which is the spirituality, the universe, as I call it. You know, where are we in the universe? Where do I fit? Where do I want to fit? What do I want to do? Why am I here? That's the great one, isn't it? Why am I here? And I think that what happened after the diet, becoming the plant-based, looking at the world in a different way, looking at nature in a different way. And that's another thing, is looking at animals in a different way. The whole thing suddenly started to go, well, there's got to be something else. They can't just be us. I realized that was a part of something bigger. I realized I was incredibly small. I was just literally a grain of sand in a beach. It was nothing really, but I was part of a bigger picture. I was part of something that was, the planet, and it had been here for all these years, and it was going to be here for all these years. And it was, God was, I went to Catholics. I went to three convents, so I knew about God, all about God. Didn't terrified me, the concept of God. And I knew all about religions, but all I saw from religion was war and angst and, not good things. I didn't see the great things in religion, although there are some incredible things, and everybody reads from the same book, if you know what I mean. And so the idea of a God wasn't going to work for me, but the idea of the universe, and it was, Brian Cox saying we were all specks of dust floating in the sky 12 billion years ago. And if you cannot get your head around the fact that that is not a miracle, that we are what we are now, from that piece of dust to where we are now to where the planet is, if you don't think that there's any miracles involved in that, and it's literally just science, that's great, that's good, but that's not the way I viewed it. And you're suddenly really enjoying your life. You're just feeling fantastic. You realize you've only got one life, you've got one body. You've got to respect that body as much as you possibly can. Look after it as best as you possibly can. And if you look after your body by eating the right things, then the other bodies around you, the animals and so forth, they'll all be. So it's all interconnected. And that's where the spirituality came from. And as I say, every single morning as I walk to the gym, I will thank the universe, do my gratitude. And I put a lot of trust in the universe as well. And there's been a couple of situations where, if it hadn't have been for the universe, I wouldn't be here today. And this is when I was sober. So you thank them for those moments in life.
Yeah. And you weren't in any way spiritual beforehand. You say you went to Catholic school.
I was atheist, like proper atheist, like no, not even this, like rubbish,
Yeah.
bullshit, And so, yeah, it was a gradual change. Didn't happen immediately, but it's something that developed. It's something that happened naturally because I let it happen. And just thanking the universe every single day. Can we all just be? I don't care if there's so much bad going on in the world at the moment. It's so hard, it's so easy to fall into that trap. But let us not forget every single morning, every single day, to thank the universe for the fact that we are here, we are alive, we are breathing, and that's it. That's it. And everything else is a bonus. And it is, it's a bonus. But there we go. That's sobriety, and that's the beauty that we can look at it from where we are now in a good place, and just try to encourage others, and just it's showing them the light, isn't it?
It is.
It's okay. It's okay. We'll hold your hand, and it's not dull.
Yeah. So you're
And
on that 25-year mission now,
absolutely,
balancing the scales.
you know that, and I'm going to overbalance them. That's what I want to do. Because there was a long time where I didn't like me. I didn't like me at all. I wasn't a nice person. And I love Justin now. I love sober Justin. I just love him. I think he's great.
I think he's great too.
He's a character. He's all right. He is.
He's great fun to chat to.
Oh, thank you so much, Louise. It's been such a pleasure. It really has.
Oh, it's been really, really lovely to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, literally anytime you release this photo.
If you'd like to find out more about Justin, then I will put the links to his social media handles in the show notes. And of course, you'll find mine there too. And you'll also find a link to my website where you can find out more about working with me, or you can get a copy of my audiobook. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day, and I'll catch you next time.